Welcome to That's a Good Question, a podcast where we answer questions about the Christian faith in plain language. If you or someone you know has questions, please submit them at peacechurch.cc/questions.
All right, well, let's dive right in. Guys, we got the most questions so far tonight about Israel. Now, this is a hot button issue. I'll read two of the questions here, and then you guys can take it however you want. Here's one. Question about the nation of Israel today. Are they still God's chosen people? Obviously, they are in full rebellion as they have rejected Christ. Is the church exclusively God's chosen? And one more, is the Israel in the Bible the same thing as the current popular belief that we all should support and defend the nation state government of Israel? And if so, if that government is or becomes corrupted, are we still bound to support and defend it? Lots to work with there.
Yeah.
The modern day nation of Israel.
Great question. Questions like these keep coming in, we're always happy to answer them because I think there's so much confusion in the world today about this, especially for Christians. And I think something we could talk about is how much that's owing to people don't necessarily know these terms, but these two ideas, dispensational theology and covenant theology, two different understandings of the Bible and how the Old Testament and the New Testament fit together. That's really what it comes down to, is those two ideas. We could talk more about that. But the short answer is the nation of Israel today the same thing as what's going on in the Old Testament? The short answer is no, it's not. And the major reason for that is because we're on the other side of the biggest event in human history, the coming of the Son of God, Jesus Christ. So in the Old Testament, the nation of Israel is God's people. God is specifically working through them. But then in the New Testament, Jesus comes. Jesus is truly God's son. So all throughout the Old Testament, we have different characters playing the role of God's son, right? Adam is called God's son. King David is called God's son. And the kings after him in the nation of Israel, even the nation of Israel itself is called God's son. So you have, ever since the fall of humanity into sin under Adam, you have different people trying to come and trying to play the role of obeying God, living in righteousness, and leading humanity back into redemption. But of course, we learned throughout the Old Testament that nobody can do it because there's no sinless, perfect human being until finally the Son of God comes as a man in Jesus, and he lives righteously, lives perfectly, fulfills the law of God, obeys its commands, does what none of us could do, and he dies the death for sin. And so we enter into a new epoch in the history of humanity. And so, yeah, the Bible tells us, even going back to Genesis 12 and Abraham, that the aim was always for Israel, or for God's promises, to go beyond one nation to many nations. And so we could talk a ton about this, but yeah, we would say that actually the church is the fulfillment of what God was trying to do through the people of Israel, people from many nations who trust the Lord. So much more we could say.
Yeah, there's much more we can say. There's two things I'll follow up to say, is that that is a perpetual question. It doesn't matter how many times it gets answered. It's going to constantly get asked. We get this fairly often, I would say. And I would always be pointing people to Romans chapter 11 and the ingrafting that God does, bringing the Gentiles into the promise, into the covenant. First one I'd say to let's look at Romans 11 and how Paul treats this notion. The other thing is, this is somewhat of a side tangent, but it's also something as a pastor I want to express to, I'm seeing mostly the congregation here, is there is something very unique going on in the modern world that the church throughout history hasn't had to wrestle with like we do. And that is the amount of discipleship that happens through the screens. I fully recognize that Peace Church and every American church is going to be discipled more by what you view online than what you probably are going to be by the pastors here. And I lament that, to be honest with you. It is a taxing, tiring thing to constantly trying to battle the bad theology that is so pervasive out there. And on the one hand, I'm a huge proponent of free speech. But free speech also means that you're going to be exposed to a lot of bad theology and a lot of misinformation. And so part of the reason that I won't speak for John or Nate, but part of the reason I get frustrated by this is that it's just, this constantly comes up because I know people are constantly being fed weak theology. And my caution for you is, be careful what you consume. especially when it's under the banner of Christian teaching. We here at the church, we are zealous and we labor very hard to make sure everything that we preach and teach is biblical, not denominational, not based on tradition, but it's biblical. And we understand that that's not going to be the framework of a lot of the content that's out there. And so we're happy to answer this question. And that's one of the things I love about Scripture and love about our Lord is that he constantly answers the same question. So we will do that. And with that, I'm also going to say to you, please, please enjoy the sun. Like, get outside. Like, get off the phone. Get off YouTube. Stop watching 1,000 different pastors and be discipled by your church, by your pastors, and by your community. And if you don't believe that we're preaching the Bible, then I will point you to some churches that I do believe are preaching the Bible. And so there's a little bit of a tangent, but...
Oh, that's a great point. Now, as a follow-up on that, how would you recommend that Christians today stay informed with what's going on in the world, but also keep that balance of focusing on our community and the here and now and putting the Bible first? How would you guys recommend you balance that out?
I'll just say, I think we have to recognize that so many of us feel the burden of every single piece of world news that's happening, and you're not meant to. There's a God in heaven who's in control, and let's pray that God raises up people locally to address issues that are happening globally, because I think people get so stressed about things that you will never be able to handle. You'll never be able to control, and you'll never be able to fix. And I'm not saying be dispassionate about the plight of what's going on in the world. I hope we can talk about what's happening in Nigeria right now. But remember, you only have so much emotional and spiritual weight that you can carry. And so make sure that you are carrying the burdens that God is placing on you, the cross for you, not someone else's. Mm-hmm. What would you say?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Yeah. I mean, so that's what we try to, as a church, we want to offer as many opportunities as we can for people to grow as followers of Jesus. Get involved in a small group, find a place to serve, and use the gifts God's given you in the church. Absolutely.
Yeah, the one thing I'd add practically is it's popular right now. You'll hear, as Christians, especially online, will tell people they're praying for them. There's been a huge rejection of that, of just saying, hey, keep your prayers to yourself. I need practical help. And I think as we take in the news, one of the things that we do is, like you said, there's so little that we can personally impact, but we can always pray.
Yeah.
And that's actually the most practical, most impactful thing we can do, because we're petitioning the God of the universe, who has all the power and all the knowledge, to act, and to act in justice, to act in love and grace and mercy. And so praying and then living your life, right?
Yeah.
All right. Praise God. Okay, so here's a, I hardly want to ask this, but it is, it's been online a lot, especially this month, but people want to know our views on Halloween, on how to respond to it, on if we think it's...
you mean Reformation Day.
Yeah, right? Exactly. You don't even know what I'm talking about, do you, John?
No idea.
This, is it a demonic day? Do we let our kids dress up and go trick-or-treating? And I do think one of the reasons why, beside it being October, there's been also a lot of discussion that came out of a Christian artist, Forrest Frank, posting something that he's not going to celebrate Halloween with his family, and then there's a back and forth with that. So what is your recommendation on how to handle Halloween as a Christian?
You want to or you want me to?
It doesn't matter.
I
don't even know what Halloween is. I don't know. It's Reformation Day. It's what October 31st is. For
those of
you
who
don't know, actually, October 31st is when Martin Luther, the reformer, October 31st, 1517, went to the door of Wittenberg Church, and he nailed his 95 theses to the door. These were his 95 points of where he thought the Roman Catholic Church had deviated from what the Bible was teaching, and so launched the Protestant Reformation. So.
Yeah,
that's the joke we're kind of referring to. So that's the other thing we celebrate on that day.
And the best jokes, you have to explain them. That's always...
I know, right? Those are the best kind. Those are the best kind, I know.
That's what really gets the laughs.
I know.
So Halloween, my kids go trick-or-treating. And then when they get home, I pick out all the Reese's Peanut Butter Cups.
Yep.
So clearly we have conversations about it. I think it's about being intentional with what you do. I think it's one of those things where you're gonna have Christian liberty, and you have Christians who fall in different places on this. So if in your heart, for me, it's the whole sacrifice meat conversation that Paul has with the Corinthians. If in your heart all you can think about is the demonic, and that Halloween is all about demons and witches, then if that's all you can do, then stay away from it. If you see this as just it's something happening in our broader society that kids can take part in and dress like their favorite Marvel character and go get free candy from their neighbor, I personally am okay with that. I would say, though, I do think, and maybe it's just exposure to social media and stuff, I do think there is a growing demonic edge that maybe it's just I'm getting older or I have that lens, but I do think seems to be like this growing demonic edge about Halloween that I just don't know was there and present. Maybe some of the older saints have said it's always been there. But I would say at the end of the day, it's going to be an area of Christian liberty. Clearly, we're not here to celebrate the demonic. Clearly, we want to reject that. But if people want to partake in something that's happening broadly in our culture, and they can do that with a good conscience, then I think this is where we need to have charity for one another. And again, if your heart cannot allow you to do that, then I affirm that, and I don't think you should do it. I think it would be bad for you to do that. I answered 2 emails about that this past week.
Mm. Interesting. Totally. Yeah, I agree. We can't participate in the demonic, but every time a kid puts on a Spider-Man costume and goes to a door to ask for candy, does that mean that we're embracing the demonic? I don't think so. So yeah, I think if you're comfortable, I think you can do that in good conscience.
Yeah. All right. Well, they keep rolling in. Lots of good questions. We're hitting the hot button ones tonight. So we've got, someone just asked a Reese's related question as a follow-up to Ryan, but we're going to skip that. That'll be bonus material. A couple questions have come in, all referencing this term that's in the news a lot lately, Christian nationalism. What are Peace Church's thoughts on Christian nationalism, and was the United States created by and for Christians?
Oh, man. Lots of good stuff in there. So much we could talk about. So let's maybe you and I can go back and forth chime in all different kinds of things. So I'll start with this. So Christian nationalism is one of those terms that I think it just depends on who you're talking to about what it means. So it is often used as a slanderous term. Often it's used in accompaniment with the word white. You often hear people say white Christian nationalist, and they're saying that is a very negative thing about a person. Now, I would say that there's a wide range of people who are called that term, going all the way from people who probably deserve some of the very derogatory parts of that go with that term, and some on the other side that I think all of us here would say these are just guys who love Jesus and love their country. So it can mean a wide range of things. So whenever somebody says, do you embrace this or would you call yourself this? I say, well, I've never called myself that, but tell me what it means. And then I'd be happy to tell you whether I agree or don't agree with that statement. I think that's always a wise thing as a Christian. When somebody comes at you with a label, labels are usually designed to try to say you're bad because of this. So just say, hey, what does that term mean? Or what does it mean to you? And then, you know, talk with them about whether you agree or disagree with the things that they're saying.
Yeah, try to root out what's your fears behind that. What are you scared?
Yeah.
What makes you fearful in that? I personally don't. It's not a term I apply to myself. It's not a term I'm fighting to use. I think if you delineate it down to like its components, there's probably going to be things I agree with. But it's a heated term that provides, it's a heated term that I think brings division. And so there's other fights I want to fight for. I do think America is the greatest country on the planet. I say that because there's nowhere else I'd want to live. I think that Christ is the king. And I think that if the entire world followed Christian values, it would be better for everybody, not just for Christians. And so there's things that I'm already starting to say that people are going to say, well, that's Christian nationalism. I say, well, that's, you take a label you're using against me on me. I'm not fighting or dying to use that term. I don't really. It's same for all the things. Like if you don't like the term covenant theology, then let's talk about what we believe about the Bible then. Like I don't need to fight for these terms, you know, you're reformed. If that's triggering to you or there's misconception, then let's talk about what we think about the Bible. So I just kind of go back to what do they mean? Like what you were saying.
Yeah. So are we Christians and do we love our country? Yes. Or I'll quit saying we. I'll just say that's true for all of us. But
I'm glad you said that because someone's...
Because you don't love our nation?
No, I do. The question is, what is Peace Church's stance?
Ah, okay.
And I want to make sure that that question or that language is something I have to entertain a lot. What is Peace Church's stance on this? And there's going to be things that I think that maybe not necessarily I wouldn't say it's Peace Church. I know I'm the lead pastor. There's probably if we dial down to the finest points of theology, there may be things that me and you see things differently. And me and you, Nate. So the notion of what does Peace Church believe? For me to say that, I'm going to say that's something that the elders have discussed, prayed over, decided, and voted on. Yeah. That's what Peace Church believes. That they're our representative body. If you want to know our opinion, then we can talk about that. But I would hate to say this is what Peace Church believes.
Yeah.
Because that's a powerful statement.
Totally. So I think, what I'll say is that, you know, if you're out there hearing this phrase Christian nationalism, you're just trying to weigh out, where am I at? Where, you know, you as a Christian, what you're trying to think of, where are you at? Well, some things to think about is this. If, you know, I think what a lot of people are trying to say is that they're accusing people of being a Christian nationalist if they've elevated their love of country above their love of God. I think that's what a lot of people would say. And obviously, that's a bad thing. You know, anything that you put above God, that's called an idol or a false god. That's bad. The Ten Commandments are very clear about that, right? And yet, as Christians, we love our nation. We want good things for our nation. We want to be involved in our nation. We also believe that Christian values, biblical values, God's design is what's best for our nation. Now, just for saying those things, I might get called a Christian nationalist. And again, that's where I just say, well, whatever. I mean, the label is neither here nor there. We believe what we believe. So,
but I think it is important to recognize that there are people who want to use that term upon themselves.
Sure.
Right. This doesn't go broadly for anyone who holds the same views as us. There are people who want to say I'm a Christian nationalism, and I think Christians should be Christian nationalists.
Sure.
But what we're saying is we want to love our neighbor, and if that's a term, that's what I'm saying. We want to love our neighbor. If that's a term that's going to be off-putting, then let's talk about what it means. Or the values behind it, and less likely to be tied to a label.
Right. Yeah, we're a majority of those who founded our country Christian. Absolutely, that's true. A majority of the signers of the Declaration, a majority of 9 out of the 13 states that made up the original U.S. colonies actually required a profession of faith in order to serve in public office. So were we overwhelmingly founded by Christians? Yes. Now, did the founders believe that having a strong Christian vision for the world was fundamental to our nation thriving? Yes, they did. It was James Madison who famously said that a democracy is for a religious people, and only a religious people will be able to protect it and continue it. So those things are true. And yet, at the same time, these are guys who believed in religious liberty. These are guys who did not, you know, try to say that everybody who's going to be a U.S. citizen needs to be a Christian. You know, we know throughout the history of the world and Christianity that doesn't tend to work out well, that trusting Jesus and loving Jesus is something that you have to do out of your heart. You can't just do that under compulsion. It doesn't work so well when we do that. Mm-hmm. So that's why I'm saying, I guess, a yes and no. Lots of Christian founders. Yes, we wanted to use biblical principles as the moral ground of our society. And yet, no, these were not trying to say that every U.S. citizen need to be compelled to be a Christian.
Great. We're getting a couple more. I'm putting both of these in the same category here, but we're getting questions about the modern trend for children to fully separate from their parents as adults. So to say I'm creating a boundary where we don't communicate anymore or you don't see the grandkids. Have you encountered that, and what has been your pastoral response to that trend?
I've encountered it. I don't want to say frequently, but it's enough to make me entertain the term frequently. It's so heartbreaking. It's so sad. Like in my time as a pastor, I've never been through a season, and I'll say the last 3 years, where I've encountered so many adult children breaking fellowship with their parents. And that is such a pastoral question, and we're talking about real people and their real experiences, And it's hard to address it openly, blanketly, without feeling like it's going to mischaracterize, you know, people's level of hurt and stuff like that. I do think that we live in a very, we're very therapeutic conscience culture. And so the word trauma comes up, I think, probably more frequently than it rightfully should. Now, I say that without wanting to undermine those who have actually experienced trauma. But I would say, like, we're not meant to be separated as families, right? That part of what Christ does in our hearts is bring healing, and restoration between us and God, between us and the world, and even each other, including families. It's such a prevalent thing that even The Atlantic magazine had an article on it, with this growing, I'll say, trend. Not to minimize it, this growing. Increasing awareness of adult children separating with their families, and then the notion that the grandparents don't get to see their grandkids, which, I mean, the Bible is loaded with the beauty of that sort of intergenerational connection within a family, and it's so heartbreaking. My response is I really want to wade into the waters of that with families. I'm doing that with a couple families right now, actually, and which is why I'm hesitant to speak too broadly, because I'm dealing with two situations where it's like this as a pastor. But both of these are very different in their genesis. And so it's hard to speak in a blanket term. I would say that the gospel is meant to bring restoration, and between us and God, and between us and other people who are believers. And so when you got a family who's believers in Christ, who have decided to break fellowship with one another, there's a path that the Bible outlines, Jesus outlines, for that to happen. And I want to make sure the families have actually followed those steps, and it's warranted for that to be separated. Like, are we talking about true issues of safety and those sorts of things? Or that there is, is there real underlying psychosis type things that come into play? John, have you dealt with this at all?
I have. Yeah, I think for me, a lot of the rise of that has also been with the rise of the language of toxic people, toxic relationships,
just all that. Yeah, yeah.
That's what I hear a lot, is this. That word toxic has become a buzzword that people use a lot.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that's always wrong, because it developed out of us trying to identify other people that our relationship with them actually hurts us. I think that's helpful to think about. But I think since that's become such a popular thing to talk about, though, the number of people declaring that they have toxic family members or friends has risen dramatically. And so I've talked with some people that are in some very heartbreaking situations where they are, you know, really being hurt by mom and dad or other people in their lives. And yet, I guess what I want to say is that toxic is a very strong word. Mm-hmm. Cutting people out of your life is a very strong action. And so I guess I just, in my mind, you've got to just wonder, is if this is more than like 1 or 2% of the relationships that you have, I think you maybe just need to wonder, like, is my threshold too low for tolerating tough people in my life? Mm-hmm.
This couple more questions came in that are, I'd say, a similar theme, but questions about the growing trend to identify narcissism and narcissistic people. Mm. I heard both of you say, with family especially, that it should be rare, hopefully, that you make a full cutoff. But just in general, as we work and live with people, should we identify when people are having these harmful relationships with us and put up the proper boundaries? What does that look like in the life of a Christian in the world?
So for me, one of the ways I think about the question, and maybe I'm not answering it, but I also think, what effect will it have on my children? And so I want to make sure that my children are only in environments, or no, they're not going to be exposed to heavily toxic environments where, you know, the Christian faith or Jesus are going to be mocked or diminished, or I don't bring my kids around those environments. And if I have family members who are going to act like that, knowing where I stand, then I'm going to stay away in those settings. That's one of the ways I personally, because I do have a high tolerance. I think as pastors, you kind of have to have a high tolerance for people.
What does that mean?
Yeah, people can be terrible, actually.
I mean, that's how he feels working with us every day in the office.
Yeah, what if your boss is toxic? What do you do then? Anyway, John, do you have anything to say about this?
You won't have to worry about it.
There's a growing trend, John, that you'll hear people diagnosing each other as narcissistic or
different
psychological or cultural terms. Is that healthy? Is that helpful? What are your warnings about that?
I think I feel about that much like the word toxic again. I think there's so much stuff nowadays in what I would call pop psychology, right? We're taking a psychological term, we're introducing it into the popular world, and we're using it at a high frequency. It's one of those things. Again, the word narcissist is a helpful term. It describes a certain set of behaviors and patterns, and that can be really helpful. But if we diagnose 80% of the world with it, then it's no longer helpful. And so that's the thing, is that I've heard it used so frequently that at a certain point, it just becomes unhelpful to me. Yeah. So, I'm not saying it doesn't exist. It's there. There are people that struggle with it. And yet, the way that I hear some people describe narcissism, I'd say that probably 90% of the world struggles with it. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing, is I think the point is that we are all sinners. And so we're all on a spectrum of this. Some, you know, narcissism in some ways is just boils down to selfishness and self-centeredness,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I mean, a prideful person doesn't make
pride,
them a narcissist.
Pride, self-centeredness. We are all on a spectrum somewhere of experiencing that. You know, as followers of Jesus, we want it to be lower. We want to be on the lower side of experiencing that. But all of us have some level of that.
I mean, narcissism is a clinically diagnosed condition, right? And I do hear it so much. This person's a narcissist, kind of like with the toxic thing. And to say that, it may be real, because it is real. But to say that, honestly, as a pastor, it's like, okay, you just used such a massively loaded term. Now we got to do a lot of unpacking to find out if you're overreacting, if this person's actually a narcissist. Like, that just opened up an incredible conversation. And I'm not saying that we shouldn't figure out if a person is a narcissist, but I would say, like you said, that with pop psychology, it's the same thing. You know, one of the worst things we should do is Google our symptoms, right? Google's also a terrible therapist. Mm-hmm. And don't put in the set of characteristics about this person who's a problem in your life. Google tells you they're a narcissist, and now suddenly they're a narcissist. Like, that's, like you're saying, like we got to keep that term to mean what it means.
Yeah. When I hear those things, I think, you know, if I'm dealing with a person and somebody introduces to me the idea that this person is a narcissist, I say, okay, well, maybe that's one lens maybe to look at the situation through. And I just think, okay, you know, I'll think about it that way. I'll think about it some other ways. Don't accept it as the sole lens to view a person through. Yep. That's usually a pretty dangerous place to go. Think about it as one way to think about the person and the problem.
Yeah. Hmm. Helpful. Well, guys, I'm getting a little worried because the last three questions that came in have all been about the same topic. Hmm. And it says, what do you pastors think about AI? Is the church going to use AI? Will AI ever achieve intelligence? What is intelligence? And this is just starting to sound like AI asking these questions. So I don't know who's asking. Maybe one of you out there or the computers are wanting to know what we really think of them. But we've asked this one before. This is a thing that comes up on That's a Good Question.
I'm actually an AI robot. Yeah. I'm just here to confess.
That doesn't surprise all of us, John. Ryan? John?
Yeah.
AI.
I'm on the younger edge of Gen X, and it seemed like every other movie for me growing up was warning about the dangers of AI. And so I say that to say I was trained to fear it growing up. And I think it is incredibly dangerous. I think we are dealing with a technology that is going to quickly surpass our ability to control it and understand it. And that's a very dangerous thing. I will say, though, and I don't want to sound like a fatalist, but the cat's out of the bag. Like, there's no going back now. And so we've got to figure out how to exist in a world where that's the thing. And I was just telling Pastor John before we started that I was watching this clip online where this professor was just livid at his class. It's like literally screaming at his lecture hall because he was saying that I can clearly tell your essays are written by ChatGPT and knock it off. Mm. And it's like, can you stop it? And so, I mean, as far as like what we do, as far as the church, we don't have a formal plan or strategy using it. It's been, so I've used ChatGPT ChatGPT to do some editing, but I don't like seek its counsel. I hope it's apparent that it doesn't write my sermons. And I will say though, like, I don't want to sound like an alarmist or fatalist, but I don't think it's ultimately going to lead to good places. But I also think the window of humanity is closing, so that's a whole other issue.
Is Pastor Ryan going to declare a date for the end
tonight?
No? Okay. I was just checking. ChatGPT maybe?
Did we ask it yet? Maybe they, no, yeah.
We should ask it.
Yeah.
No, it's, I mean, in some ways it's like any other, in some ways it's like any other technology, in some ways it's not. In one way, it's like any other technology, in that technology doesn't have to be inherently good or bad. It can be used for either good or bad. On the other hand, the idea of something human-like that's not actually human, you know, human intelligence without a human soul is one way maybe to think about it. You know, it is that,
right?
That sounds a little scary. You know, that's why there's so many movies made about the topic.
Well, I mean, and not to get crazy, but it sounds demonic, right? Yeah. It sounds like just the thing the enemy would use to deceive people. And I mean, there's a recent story about ChatGPT, or I don't know if it was that exact AI, but this kid was dealing with suicidal tendencies, asking this bot if it should seek help. And the AI said no, that it could help it. And this kid ended up killing himself. Man. And it's just another level of technology that when we give phones and internet access to our kids, we're opening them up to a world that we don't even begin to understand. And it's so much bigger than what we can imagine. I'm not a prophet, but I got to think as we get closer to the end, it'll be a tool the enemy uses. Mm-hmm. But I mean, on the flip, like you're saying though, like I don't want to be the person that fears the next level of technology, because is there a way to harness it for the glory of God, and another way for us to bring creation under the dominion that God called us to from Genesis 1? I mean, at the end of the day, it's going to be technology that we've developed. Can we also find a way to make sure that it's under our dominion? I just the things that, I mean, not just AI, but like quantum computing, things that are happening at such a microscopic level that it's these things are developing themselves, that it's freaky.
Yeah, the way I've been approaching it, especially as a dad of young kids, is just see the arc of, for a long time, it seemed like technology was kind of slowly helping us to be able to connect with people more. And it feels like it's taken the other direction. Before AI, I'd say to a lot of the implications of internet and social media. I had a personal experience where my kids, I always like, they like when I make up stories, and they'll have me include them in the stories and challenge me with different topics. And it's a really fun thing. And I, right when AI was starting up, I thought, oh, it'd be fun to look up, hey, can you make a children's story for a five-year-old about trains and dragons and incorporate space and the, you know, all the different things they wanted. And it just put it out like crazy. And I started reading it and I just stopped, because I just had this profound feeling that it was disconnecting me from my kids more than connecting me. And I think we're going to keep feeling that more and more. I don't know much about it, to be honest, but that's the part that worries me.